We're floating like butterflies and we're stinging like bees. Rumble, you badass jet pilots, rumble. Drew Brown here. Welcome to the Wingman Show, where we hope to inspire, we hope to learn, and we hope to entertain so we can all grow and be happy. I'd like to introduce to you my main man, my wingman, and my friend, Dr. Paul Thompson. What's up, Brother Paul?
Oh, not much, Mr. Drew. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard from Drew Brown, Dark Able, the American Dream, the man, the myth, the legend, the pilot's pilot, the role model's role model, and most importantly, His Royal Fullness. I'm doing well today, Mr. Drew. I guess you're doing well.
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. Before we get into our topic, though, I do want to say something, Paul. The show before this one, I think I was telling you that I was getting a new puppy. Do you remember that?
Yes, the Harlequin.
Yes, a Harlequin Great Dane puppy. And when you see this, I will show the picture of the Harlequin that I was supposed to get. Well, I got scammed for $1,000. Oh, and I really believe I'm smart enough not to get scammed. And that's just not true. The scammers out there, what they do is they touch your heart. So when they were showing me pictures of a Harlequin Great Dane, they had me. And I sent $1,000 to somebody that was a pure scam artist. The website was a scam. It was the prettiest website of dogs I've ever seen in my life. And I am going to put their website on this show. And I also tried to get ripped off by the shipping company that I'm sure was the same guy. So anyway, my point is, it ripped me apart. But what I learned was, I'm not that smart. There are smart people out there. I should have known. I had some clues. They wanted me to Zelle the money instead of PayPal. So if you don't use PayPal or a credit card, that's the only way I would pay for anything online, so you have a little bit of protection. So anyway, I was really hurt. I'm glad I waited a day because I probably would have been fine right here. Not for, believe it or not, losing the thousand. It wasn't losing that stack that got me upset. It was that I didn't get my little puppy. So for Matt, sorry, Paul, you got a subject for us today?
Yeah, how about the royal family? There was a big interview with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle with Oprah Winfrey. I didn't really watch it, but I just heard about some of the highlights, and I just wondering what you thought about the whole royal family thing in general.
Well, let's give a thumbs up to Oprah. Oprah got paid $7 million from CBS just to show it. She still has the interview just to show it that one time, $7 million. So way to go, Oprah. Royal family. The interview was very interesting. I got a problem with the royal family because I think that royalty is against God's will. And I'm not talking religion. I just believe every man is equal to each other. And that if you have royal blood, that's BS. How about that? You should not be a leader because your father was a leader. You should be a leader because you earned that position.
I'm sorry. You know, if you're like an imbecile, then no, that's not, you shouldn't be in charge of anything. Just
because. Well, that's what happens because let's be honest here. Let's talk about this black and white thing. Inbreeding happens in royal families. I hope you know. And there have been many cases of mental illness. When you go outside of your genetics, like when a white person has a child with a black person or an Asian with Hispanic, you have multiple genes in you and you actually, you're multicultural, not multiracial. There's one race, human race, get with it. So the actual royal thing is not good. You know, if you only kept to your genes, good things don't happen. And that's why you can't have babies with your cousin or your parents or your sister, because it's not right. But when you expand that gene pool, point being, royal family, my butt. Who makes them royal? Who made them? Royalty was gotten by force. And men of weak morale are always attracted to force. And that's an Albert Einstein quote. I wish that was me. So royal doesn't mean much to me. And I'm amazed how Americans love this royalty thing. I mean, they went crazy over Princess Diana's wedding. I remember my wife woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch that wedding. And I just don't understand it. They're not better than I am. Mother Teresa is better than all of them, as far as I'm concerned. Okay. So that's my feel on royalty. To be honest with you, I don't know if I said it as well as I should have, but that's the best I can do right now. But I don't believe in royalty.
Yeah. To me, you know, the royal family, the British royal family, I guess they are the, I guess the big winners in the game of accumulating things. There's one point they used to say the sun never shines or the sun never sets on the British Empire. They own stuff here, there, and everywhere. Africa, India, Australia, Canada, you name it. They had a lot of stuff. And a lot of it is, you know, I look at the royal family as an icon. They're icons of wealth and power. Maybe not so much now, but for the 16th, 17th, 18th century, they sure were. Around the early 1900s to the 60s, the stuff became too expensive and they had to basically sell a lot of it off. But you know that the Queen is still the head of state, a figurehead, really, in about 54 countries now?
Really? With no power?
Yeah. Recently, I think it was Antigua or some other country in the Caribbean. Sure. They recently took her off the money. She's still on the money on a lot of stuff. It's kind of like Zamunda with Eddie Murphy's face on the bills. She's on a lot of stuff. She's still on the Australian bill and I believe the Canadian dollar, last time I checked. So it's that's good work if you can have it. But basically, you get to exploit people's resources again through military power. That's how they defended themselves.
Force.
The navy.
War.
The navy. Battleships. Show your place. What we want you to do. You don't want to do it. We get a ship. We blow everything up. Destroy it. We'll rebuild it for you. But you got to do what we say.
Notice what I noticed about royalty. Paul, look at the kings. We've traveled to England many a times, and I've been in the Church of England, and I noticed that the graves, the memorials, each king is bigger than the last. The memorials keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because the one thing kings couldn't do back then was live a long time. They died at 30, 35 years old. Everybody did. Kings wanted to stay alive forever. And King James rewrote the entire Bible just so his name could stay alive forever. I hope people realize that that was a royal king who took a Bible and rewrote it and said whatever he wanted to say in it. He won his royalty through murder, rape, incest, and every other bad thing that royals have been doing for thousands of years against the common man.
Okay, just for clarification, you're not accusing LeBron James of this, are you?
He's the bomb king. He can play that ball, though.
Okay,
man, did you see Stephen Curry shoot the other day at the NBA All-Star game?
And Damian Lillard, they matched each other.
Oh my! They're getting way to the next level. You see what practice does? You see, practice breeds confidence. We're getting off on another subject, but boy, them boys are bad.
Okay.
You know what Steph Curry did really for basketball? He changed it because you don't have to be big anymore. Right. You just have to know how to shoot. And to know how to shoot, the best way to do that is practice. So he changed the whole game. Remember, it always used to be the big man.
Right, because we're always playing inside. They don't play inside that much now.
Well, they shoot so far, they should start making fours.
Digressing a little bit in the Ice Cube's 3-on-3 thing, they do have a 4-point shot.
Yes.
Similar. And I think they got a lot of stuff from the Ice Cube 3-on-3 deal.
Yes. I like the new format.
Yeah.
I like the new format, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I'm sure they got that from Ice Cube, because one time I saw an interview where he said NBA should be paying me some money for the changes they're making. Because, you know, I watched it in the middle of the summer once, and it's very entertaining. 3-on-3.
Oh, yeah.
Like you played in the yard, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Ice Cube is one of my favorite rappers, and I love to watch any movie he's in for some reason. But that boy is the bomb rapper.
He's a good actor, too. I like his
acting. He's a great actor. I love Ice Cube. Okay, we're getting back to royals. So what do you think about the royals? They have zero power, zero, in the English Parliament now. I think they ask the Queen questions just to be proper. So it's all BS. It's all a big parade. It's all a big show.
Yeah. I think the Prime Minister, the prime minister doesn't really address her much directly. It's almost like somebody's aunt. You know, I know, nice to see you at the dinner here, but they're not a part of any legislative action and things like that.
No.
It's ceremonial. It's expensive. Yeah.
You know what they did? They are upgrading their brains. You know, it used to be only boys that could be the next leader.
Yes.
And they've just recently changed it that it's just the next child, and it doesn't have to be a boy. It could be a girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, modern royalty. So yeah. Now just the girls are as good as the guys.
Yeah. Then I still say, well, who cares?
Who cares?
Who cares? You know. But it's good. You know, they've still got some money left over. They looted billions and destroyed a lot of people. But they've got a few dollars left over. So Meghan and Harry have shifted. He's got his mother left him some money.
$10 million.
$10 million. That's not a bad start. And they've got business interests over here.
Netflix just signed both of them for $100 million, I heard.
That's a lot of money. That's pretty good. That's good work. That's not a bad first job.
You know, I'm a public speaker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get paid to speak, except I don't get paid $1 million a speech.
Well, $750,000 for you. they've done really, really well. Personally, I don't care. Most people in this country probably don't care. They like Hollywood people and celebrities. So, you know, if they're not playing sports, they're not singing and dancing, they've got to do something to keep some attention up other than have a little racial problem. But think about it. You know, you got a racial situation so bad in England, you got to come to the U.S. for relief.
I'm going to be honest with you. An older person or Charles probably said that. You have to realize how Charles was born. You know, I'm starting to have empathy. You have to think of how people were raised. They only know what they know. They're not supposed to know things that they've never been taught. Harry said something really incredible. He said, my dad and my brother are trapped and can't ever get out. Mm-hmm. And that is pretty deep. And, you know, his father stopped taking calls from him.
Uh-huh. He's trapped like Al Pacino in The Godfather.
Once you come in, we can't get out. Yeah. What did he say? That wasn't
Every time I try to get out, they keep dragging me back in or something like that.
Say it better? Every time they try to get out, they're dragging me back in, you know?
Maybe you can put it in there without getting too much. Yeah, well, I guess they are trapped. Well, someone's got to do it. He just decided he's going to, you know, start his own thing.
Well, the whole thing about what color is the baby going to be, you know, that's a big issue.
Right.
I'll tell you what color it's going to be. The color of a human being. And only Shorty will know the amount of melanin this child will have. Mm-hmm. Dumb, ignorant people.
There are black people in the royal family. There's at least two queens that have been black. One is Queen Philippa, and the other one is Queen Charlotte. From the picture of Queen Charlotte, looks like one of my aunts. They named the city after Charlotte, North Carolina.
British queens?
Yeah.
British?
British.
Not of England.
Of England. Very light skin. The first one, Philippa.
They're queens or they're royals?
Queens. Queens.
There's only one queen.
Well, in the past.
There's never been a black queen of England? Paul?
Yes. Queen Philippa. Philippa. You can look
and
it
you're
up.
You're probably right.
I wasn't there. This is.
I'm not as smart as you, I'll tell you that. So you're probably right.
Okay. Or look at.
I know there have been a lot of black African queens. And, you know, African kings and queens, that's not an exception either. It's not just British.
Right.
Royalty has always been sought by power and by war and by death.
Right.
The Egyptian kings, mm-hmm. You know, all kings. I just don't believe that you're any better because of your bloodline. And that's all they believe. That's all they believe. They truly do think they're better people than we are. Right. We are called commoners.
And the more common, the better. You know, in the world, I think there are like about 54 monarchies around the world, thereabouts. There's like 3 in Africa, 10 to 12 in Europe, 3 in Australia. There's a few here and there.
How many active?
I think 54.
Like that actually the king is the boss?
Yeah. Like the Sultan of Brunei. Maybe he's a Sultan, or the Sultan of this, of Oman and United Arab Emirates. To have the guy, you know, the guy that see Ben whatever in Dubai. The guy's picture all over the place.
Oh yeah. I was in Thailand, Paul. You've flown to Thailand before. So in Thailand, they have a king. It looks like they love their king. Because I was talking with a guy who owned the store. We were talking about the king. And we were talking this, talking that. And when it started to get a little too racy, he said, please don't talk about my king anymore. And refused to anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you know, in those countries, if you get found out that you're talking bad about the king, they take you away.
Oh, yeah. Recently, that's happened in Thailand. I read about that about a month ago. Yeah. But, you know, you don't realize it, but you actually may have parity with the king in Thailand, king and queen. Because it was many years ago, and I was still living in Memphis, there was a Thai restaurant that opened up off Winchester Boulevard in Hickory Hill area, near that mm-hmm. place where they had the big music store. And I remember...
Planet Music.
Yeah, near Planet Music. Remember your wife tell me at one point, oh, that's a good place, you should go get some. So one time I just drove by and I went in there and I ordered some takeout food. Uh-huh. And guess what?
What?
I went in and this place was very sparse, but there were two pictures there. One was a king and queen of Thailand. The other one was Drew Brown in a flight suit. This is, I'm not making this up. This is true. It was kind of cockeyed and crooked. But it was, so you are actually related. You can say you are actually related to royalty. I can pass a lie detector on that one. The food was okay. The food was okay. It's pretty good. But yes, and nothing else. They had like a light bulb and cooking stuff. King and Queen of Thailand.
That's too funny. Andrew Brown.
It's true. This is true. It may still be there.
Fact number three is... everything you do comes back to you. You get away with nothing. And the reason I know this is because I've tried for many years to get away with something mm-hmm. and it never works. So now I realize you get away with nothing. Make a negative a positive and learn from the past. What do you think about the circle theory, Paul?
Well, it can happen. Sometimes it can. And when it happens, it usually happens unexpectedly. I'll give you an example. This is a strange one, but I saw it on a 60 Minutes interview some years ago, and they're interviewing one of your Navy brethren, Admiral Hiram Rickover.
Yeah.
Okay, he was the father of the nuclear navy, the father of nuclear power in the United States. A lot of folks came from the nuclear navy and run these power plants in the United States and other parts of the world. Well, the thing was, when he was getting things started, he was in charge of it. He picked his officers individually. And apparently the screening process was very difficult. You talked about it. Well, one time, I think it was Mike Wallace or someone asked him on the interview about his treatment. Well, he was Jewish. And apparently he was not well treated by some members at the Naval Academy. Many years later, when he's in charge of the nuclear program, some of these same people were interviewed by him for these positions. And I remember the interviewer, Mike Wallace, whoever, asking, well, did you, how did they do? Did you forgive them? And he just made a sneer. He said, no. I'm going to assume that they really wanted those positions, but they never got them for things that they did in the past. That's my story.
Admiral Rickover, that wasn't just a profile thing. I wanted to get him back. I don't think he wanted those type of people around his nuclear program, because he used to take junior officers out, take them to lunch. If any one of them, he would watch them order. But if they salt and peppered their food before they tasted it, they were out of the program. Stop it. You can leave now. I'll pay for your lunch. Bye-bye. Another one was he would tell one of these young JOs in his big office, okay, make me mad. And the guy said, what? He said, yeah, make me angry. Let me see you make me angry. And the kids usually, I can't. So one kid took, there was a brand new model of his first nuclear sub on his desk. He said, make me angry. The guy stood up, picked up that model. The admiral said, no, okay, good. You made me angry. He said, no, I didn't. Bam! And broke it all over the place. And he got his job.
Okay, that's very interesting.
So let me tell you a personal story about why I know that everything you do comes back to you. When I was young, I think this was in Brooklyn, we had a little gang, and we were called like the Thunderbirds or the Imperials. That's what we were called, the Imperials. And we used to have the bicycles with the banana seats and the sissy bars. You remember that?
Yeah.
So on the front of our bikes, we would steal this emblem off this Imperial car. There were cars called the Imperial, and they had a beautiful little bird on the back. And we would take a screwdriver or something, just pop that thing off, and then we would place it on our bicycle. And that's why we were the Imperials, okay? We weren't so tough, but we were the Imperials.
But you're thieves, basically. You were not murderers, you were thieves.
We were thieves?
Yeah.
No, we just took, no, but it's our emblem. It shouldn't be on your car.
Okay, we just took it. Yeah, okay, all right. It's just my.
What you just said is true. We stole emblems off of cars. I haven't ever thought about this until flying for FedEx. We started getting paid some money. You know, in the beginning, you don't get a lot of money. But as you move on, you start making some money. I bought a big black Fleetwood Broham Cadillac with the gold package, baby. All the trim was gold. It was the most beautiful car I've ever seen. Needless to say, one night, I park it, I get out the next morning, and every piece of gold is gone. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I thought of, damn, I'm paying back for the Imperials. And one of the things I was proud of when I stole mine is that I was very careful not to scratch the car. Well, guess what? These thieves were also very careful not to scratch my car. So I knew it was payback. And I think the gold kit back then was $500 or something. I don't know what it is. So I ate it and I got a new gold kit. 2 weeks later, they stole it again. So and the point is that when you do something wrong, when it comes back to you, it comes with interest. It comes with interest. And the longer it takes to come back to you, the greater that interest is. And when it comes back, it whips your butt.
That's true.
Because I just knew that one time, okay, we're even Steven. Well, I'm not in charge, Shorty is. Okay, so you don't get to pick your payback.
Well, and I hope it doesn't get worse now that you've made a confession. If the NYPD comes at you, now you pleaded guilty to misdemeanor.
You know how many years ago that is? Maybe over 50.
Okay, half a century. Okay, you're probably good.
Think so?
You're probably okay.
You know what I think some of the worst paybacks are? When you hurt people. Mm-hmm. When it's not stuff anymore, when it's now people you take advantage of, or just like me, they rip off. I'm not worried about them. You know why? When my daddy had a bar called Bundini's World, everybody used to go there. Jimi Hendrix was there. Joe Namath, all of them used to go. It was on 2nd Avenue in New York called Bundini's World. And Leroy Neiman, the famous artist, actually had a painting of me that Daddy hung in the bar. Well, one day, Daddy comes home and he's got a big patch on his face. And it's because two guys robbed him, cut his face open, stole all his money, stole my picture, the Leroy Neiman picture. They robbed him and cut him. And I was so angry. And for some reason, my dad was kind of cool about it. And I'm not sure why. He said, don't worry. Shorty will take care of him. I'll be God dang if not in 2 weeks. He said, remember them two guys who cut me? I said, yeah. He said, they're both dead now. And I was like, yeah, I told you, Daddy. And right then and there, he gave me one of my biggest lessons. Don't ever be happy for the retribution that Shorty gives somebody. That's not your business. You just keep on moving. So the one thing I learned is if somebody does hurt me and they do get it, I do not revel in that glory at all. And I learned that from a little boy. So everything you do comes back to you.
And particularly for criminals, when they get caught, a lot of times they're sorry, but they're more really sorry they got caught because they went one too many times.
I, honest to God, don't you believe this, Paul, that the ones who get caught and were not guilty of doing that crime but get caught anyway, they did crimes before.
Okay. Yeah. That's an Ed Koch thing, you know. I'll find something. Unfortunately,
no, I'm not talking about putting black people away in prison falsely. We're not talking about that. I'm talking about thieves. And usually if a thief is a thief, he might not get caught at one robbery, but he dang sure had 40 before that. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, that's his profession. Yeah, I agree with that.
That's what I meant. I have to clarify. I don't want them cards and letters coming. Well, you know what the name of our show is, Paul? It's the Wingman Show. No, actually, it's my time to tell you about one of my best wingmen. My life changed when I joined the United States Navy. I joined the Navy, honest to God, to get a job. I joined the Navy because I wanted to learn how to fly so I could be an airline pilot. That was the only reason. Actually, I went to the Air Force first. And the Air Force was so excited to have me. Black, educated, physically qualified, except that they told me my class was in 16 weeks. Well, the Navy doesn't have a very good racial history, you know. They just don't have good history with race relations. And when I went to the Navy and they had a black candidate that was physically and mentally qualified, Paul, I was in the United States Navy in 11 days. That's how bad they wanted me. So after I got in the Navy, I went to this thing called AOCS that you went to also, Aviation Officer Candidate School. And back then, all Navy pilots were trained by Marines.
Correct.
I know nothing of the military, Paul. I know zero of anything military. I just want a job. I know they pay you every 2 weeks and they don't miss. I have two kids. I have a wife. I need a job. So this is what I'm doing. Well, Gunnery Sergeant Clark, you realize that I'm the only black one there. First day, they wake us up at 4 o'clock in the morning, put us out in the freezing cold on the front of the, in the front of Bat 2, Battalion 2. Right. Remember that? They put you out on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I was in Bat 2.
All of us are shivering. He walks right up to my face and he said, "Oh, you didn't like that, you big black son of a bitch?" Excuse me? I didn't say that. Mm-hmm. It freaked me out. You can't talk about color. This is 1981. You cannot allow to do it. He said, "You didn't like that, huh? You want me to call Jesse Jackson? Or maybe I'll call Martin Luther King? You want me to do that?" I was freaking out. I really thought that they weren't allowed to do this anymore. Anyway, long story short, he picked on me for 6 out of the 16 weeks so hard that it was crazy. And I now have been friends with him for over 40 years. He was my wingman. He knew that the Navy would try to get me out of the flight program. He knew it. And he wanted to know right then and there if I could take all the BS that these other Navy racists might throw my way. He wanted to know if I could make it. And once he found out I could make it, I was his main man. Not that he told me until afterwards, but I was everything he wanted. My father was in the Navy at 13, and they kicked him out because he called an officer a nigger. They didn't put him in jail because he was only 13 years old. They just kicked him out of the Navy. Whenever you become an officer, and you know this tradition, you give a silver dollar to your gunnery sergeant, and believe it or not, he salutes you. Mm-hmm. But when I went up to give my gunnery sergeant Clark, because he absolutely changed my life, I thought I was bad. He broke me down to nothing, and he made me prove I was bad. Anyway, when I went up to salute him, I gave him two silver dollars. And one was for my dad and one was for me. That man, my dad used to always tell me, and I hated it, "You're going to have other fathers in your life. Other people are going to take care of you. You're going to have other fathers in your life." I said, "Dad, no, you're my only dad. You're my only dad." Well, once again, he was right. And Gunnery Clark was kind of like my father there. He made me really prove that I was who I thought I was. And I won't ever forget Gunnery Sergeant Clark. And to this day, I talk to him at least 3-4 times a year. And it's the only reason I like Facebook, because Facebook allowed me to find him.
Cool.
So that's my wingman story. He was a United States Marine Corps gunnery sergeant, and he changed my life at just the right time. So that's my wingman.
That's good. Again, once again, that's proof positive that you can find mutual support in the most unexpected of places.
So I think that from that story, you know, you've been a wingman to many people, Paul. I've been a wingman to some. Being a wingman is probably the most important thing you could do. So anybody hears this podcast and you can help another, stop being a wingman. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. Oh, wow, I almost forgot to say that. Subscribe, like. What else are we supposed to do, Paul? Share. Yeah, do all those things. We were told to say that. And I'll put it down on the screen anyway. But we really enjoyed having everybody here. Paul, you got anything to tell them before we leave?
No, not much other than hopefully this will be the beginning of more good stuff to come. Not trying to overburden anybody with too much stuff. Just a few topics here and there to get you to think. Maybe laugh a little bit.
So you know what time it is, right? It's time to say we're floating like butterflies and stinging like bees. Rumble, you badass jet pilots, rumble. We want to thank all of you for your time, because your time is your most precious commodity, because it's the only thing we never get back, or we don't ever get back. See you guys later. Paul, I love you, man. Take care.
Hey, love you too. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.